Listen, it's The Burt Show.
Happy holidays from The Burt Show. Here's a special segment from The Burt Show Youth Group while the oldies are on vacation.
I'm not sure if this is something that is relatable for everyone, but I know that there are certain instances from my childhood that I think back to that have made a permanent imprint and impact on my current day-to-day life, okay? You might be asking, what is he talking about? What does that mean? There's a lot of content that I feel like I was consuming, TV shows, music, movies, whatever, when I was a kid, that were all meant for kids, but there's some certain scenes that I remember from certain things that have scarred me to this day. Okay. For example, all right. When I was a kid, I used to love being an adventurous kid and going out and hunting for bugs and looking underneath rocks and picking up worms and collecting stuff and showing them off to my parents. I had no problem with that until one very specific SpongeBob episode. And I don't know if you guys know what I'm talking about, but there's a specific SpongeBob episode where SpongeBob and Patrick adopt a baby caterpillar.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
And the caterpillar goes into a cocoon and turns into a butterfly.
Aww.
But they think it's the cutest thing ever. And when it comes out as a butterfly, instead of it being this cartoon butterfly like you would expect on, you know, Nickelodeon SpongeBob, it would jump scare you with this super close up, like macro lens of what a very close up of what a butterfly looks like. And it made this aggressive, like, and it grossed me out so much that to this day, I have some form of fear of bugs because of this.
Wow.
Like bugs or butterflies?
Butterflies specifically, but also just bugs in general. Like it completely turned me off to that entire thing to the point where I went on a grad trip to Bali and we went to this really cool butterfly garden and I almost had a panic attack the entire time.
I was about to say, if you have never experienced anxiety until you go to a butterfly garden because everyone looks so zen. It's so beautiful. Everyone's like, wow, isn't this just like the beauty of nature? And if you have any kind of fear of like bugs getting on you, you're just doing everything you can to not look like a butterfly murderer. Because anytime something would land on me, I'd be like,
I will never understand you weirdos who are scared of butterflies. I dated someone like that and I'm like, tell me on this doll where it touched you. Why are you so afraid?
They're so like unpredictable with the way that they move. And I remember walking through this garden with like my hood up and I was on a trip with like four girls and I was just walking and I looked like the biggest baby in the entire world. But there was no amount of courage that I could muster up to get me to walk through that with my shoulders back and looking confident.
Dear God.
I remember that SpongeBob episode. First of all, what was up with SpongeBob specifically having so many terrifying moments in its like first three seasons? Yeah. It was the butterfly. Mm. It was Nosferatu. Yeah.
That was weird.
The vampire?
Hatchling slasher, yeah. The hatchling and slasher was freaky.
Yeah. Hatchling and slasher
the
was so freaky.
The hatchling
See, you guys are Gen Zers. I am a part of the Burt Show Youth Group, but I am actually the oldest one here. So for my people and the millennials, when you were a kid, the shows that probably freaked me out the most was probably Ren and Stimpy. Mm. There were some gross, disgusting things on that show. It was made for kids, technically, but a lot of my friends' parents wouldn't even allow you to watch it because it was so adult. I'm talking about close-ups on boogers and mucus and toenails and fungus.
Nope.
It was so gross.
All right. I'm going to explain this show to you. You guys tell me if you can remember what this is. It was a girl with red hair. She was like the main character, but then the bad guy lived like in a sewer or in like a laundry chute. And he
the Little Mermaid.
It's like Pepper Ann? What is this?
And I think he would come up out of the toilet. So that's part one of my fear. Part two is, do you remember that video on YouTube where it looks like a commercial? There's a car driving down the street. And
I just
out of
played
nowhere,
this for Abby.
Out of nowhere.
On the show.
Crazy jump scare.
Yeah.
One of the most aggressive jump scares ever. So someone's brother showed me that at a party. It traumatized me so horribly. And I'm not being dramatic here. For at least 5 years, I would go to the bathroom and porcelain toilet, I would slam the back of the toilet lid down, slam it and run out. It was hard to live with me because every time I went to the bathroom, I'd slam the toilet lid and sprint out. It's so loud.
When I was like 12, 13 years old, my mother showed me that famous jump scare YouTube video.
It's so
and
old.
I screamed for so long that she slapped me in the face to get me to stop being hysterical.
Oh my God.
First of all,
the thing that got me as a kid was the Gremlin movie. The Gremlins movie.
Love Gremlins.
So I got like a cousin of mine got me one of those like little Furby things as like a gift. And I was terrified to get it wet because I thought it would turn into a Gremlin.
No.
It freaked me out. I hated those things.
There were definitely a bunch of things that freaked me out as a kid. Like Halloween Town, the Calabar's Revenge, like that whole movie freaked out of movie theaters. But have you ever seen a scene in some kind of children's media that is so sad and it comes out of nowhere for no reason? Like there's this one episode of Pokemon where like Pikachu almost dies. Is that not like the saddest thing you've ever seen?
I don't know if you guys remember the original like Pokemon movie. There's a scene in it where the main character basically he sacrifices himself and he turns into stone. And then in order for him to get brought back to life, there's like 100 Pokemon around him that start crying.
Oh
and
God.
All of their collective tears are the thing that brings him back to life. And that's one of those exact instances where I was completely taken aback by the emotions that
Pokemon
I was feeling.
Pokemon was so sad for no reason.
Okay, I figured out the name of the show. It was Lazy Town.
Lazy Town.
Do you guys remember Lazy Town?
Yes.
It ruined my life. I thought that guy was coming up out of the toilet to grab me.
But he was a friendly guy.
He was a jerk. He looked like a weirdo.
Okay, so the thing that really got me when I was a kid, it's similar to Amber's. The Muppets, literally, they made me mentally ill.
I can understand.
Which one?
So Muppets in Space, I'm not even kidding, gave me early onset OCD.
Way with E.T. I remember this so vividly. At the age of like 3 or 4, I thought if I said the word E.T. in a room by myself, he would appear. And so I thought my little OCD brain at 4 years old thought if I think E.T., he's going to appear out of nowhere. So I would say E.T. and then I would sprint out crying and my mom would be like, what's wrong? I'd be like, E.T.
That's adorable and very Abby.
It's The Bird Show.
The Bird Show.
Eve needs our help here right now because she sees it unfolding in front of her that her in-laws may be breaking up because Jason Momoa has entered the chat and has been chatting with her mother-in-law, quote unquote. Hey, Eve, good morning. You're on The Bird Show. Hi.
Hi, good morning.
So Jason Momoa is the problem, huh?
Apparently.
What's going on?
So my mother-in-law actually did file for divorce this year. She was married for over 40 years. And when Jason Momoa came in the picture, or not really the picture, but just messaging, they fell in love and she filed for divorce.
Oh wow. Wait, this is all happening. Hold on. This is happening so fast.
So yeah, Jason Momoa in quotations.
Right.
Is Facebook messaging her mother-in-law and she fell in love with him and divorced her husband of 40 years.
You're kidding me. And she really thinks that that's Jason Momoa?
Yes. No matter how much my husband and I try to tell her otherwise, she is dead set on it.
Now,
she thought she was dating Vin Diesel first.
Oh, wow. She's going through.
She's going through Hollywood.
I know.
So wait a second. There had to be, before we even dive into this more, there had to be more problems in this marriage than just Jason Momoa hitting her up on Facebook.
Well, I mean, my father-in-law could not have been easy to live with. I couldn't have lived with him.
Okay.
But, you know, that's another thing. But just to drop somebody after 40 years.
Yeah.
For someone you've never even met in person, it's just crazy.
Sure. Okay. So they're divorced now because of quote unquote Jason Momoa?
Yes, but her ex-husband now has no idea why she filed for divorce.
So
he has no idea about this relationship.
Okay.
Whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So Jason Momoa Facebooks her. They fall in love. She's now gotten a divorce, and now he's taken her, I'm assuming, for a significant amount of cash.
Yes. So she did a quick divorce and agreed to $20,000 in the divorce. He was able to, or she gave him access to her account.
Oh, my God.
Yes. He told her he needed $8,000 to fix his private jet. She sent him $8,000.
What?
And then he started sending her cash through the mail to deposit into their joint Bitcoin account. So I think he sent her a total of like $16,000. And then he has spent her whole $20,000 in divorce. She's still living in the house with her ex-husband, but he's now given her a deadline to get out. But she has no money.
Because she's giving it all to Jason Momoa.
And get this.
Exactly.
Last night I'm talking to Eve, and he's spent her $20,000 plus the $16,000. He's smart. He gives her cash, but he ends up spending the cash. So on top of the 20, he spent that 16 as well. So he's like playing human roulette where he's getting 2-1 playing this woman.
Your mother-in-law is roughly how old?
Late
60s.
Late
60s? Yes. So what can we do to help here? I mean, it seems... I don't even know what questions to ask because it seems so outrageous that anybody would ever believe that this could be a real story. Right?
It happens all the time. I mean, it really does happen all the time, and it's sad. And like, yeah, you can joke about it, but at the same time, like, they're preying on older people, and you would think law enforcement could get involved in some capacity, but I don't know what the charge is there.
It's still the wild, wild west out there when it comes to this kind of thing, you know?
I feel like the only thing you could do to help is to actually prove to her that it's not him, and I don't know how you do that.
We get in touch with Jason Momoa.
Himself.
Right. And say, hey, this is the real Jason Momoa. Stop giving fake Jason Momoa money.
Yes. I wonder if we could do that.
Wait, that's actually really smart.
He actually seems like a really, really nice guy. I don't, like, if we send him messages, though, I think he'd probably think it was a joke.
I do know somebody that knows him.
Really?
My friend, Fortune Feimster. No lie. She was driving through the desert. I think it was in California. And there's this buff guy with long hair broken down on the side of the road. It was Jason Momoa.
What?
And she saved him on the side of the road. So they know, and she's in Hollywood. She knows him. I could send her a message and see, hey, can you get this message to him?
Seriously, you should try.
Yes.
Picking up a hot, sweaty, dirty Jason Momoa on the side of the road sounds like the dream I had last night.
All right, so give us 24 hours here, Eve. I didn't know this part of the connection that Tommy might have with Jason Momoa, but that would be pretty random if we could actually get him to make the call and say, hey, I know you might feel a little silly here, but this is the real Jason Momoa, and I don't need your cash.
She'll still think she was dating Vin Diesel, though.
What's that, Eve?
That would probably be the only way to convince her, because I have tried everything. I've sent her Reddit, like, links.
Yeah.
Show him where everybody has been scammed by the same name. And she's just like, oh, those people are so naive. And I'm like, Oh, wow.
Okay. All right, we're going in. Tommy, you got a homework assignment. Talk to your friend, see if she can somehow, some way link us up.
I'm on it.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks so much, you guys.
Craziness.
Get it. The Burt Show.
So, yeah, let's talk gentle parenting here for just a sec. So we started to get in this debate, which we didn't have a whole bunch of time with, but now we do today, about gentle parenting, because Cassie and Kristen are on the gentle parenting parenting side of parenting.
Yes, that is something that I personally have adopted. Can't even say my husband and I are on the same page about this, but this is something that I am very adamant about. And I say I do gentle parenting. I'm not always successful at it. I mean, there are moments as a parent that you crack and you kind of lose your cool. And that's what gentle parenting is. It's about establishing patience, and it's about treating your child with dignity and respect. They're tiny humans, and they deserve to be spoken to kindly, if at all possible. They're going to test their limits. They're going to test their boundaries. They're going to test you. And especially if you're dealing with toddlers, they are not able to be reasoned with. Their brains are growing at such a fast pace, and their brains are ever developing every single day. So it's not an easy task, but people have this misconception where they hear gentle parenting and they think it's that you let your kids walk all over you and they get to do whatever they want. No, that's not it. It's speaking kindly to your child, listening to their feelings, validating their feelings, and also trying to give them some sense of control, because when they lash out, it's because they feel like they lack control. So giving them options is actually a good thing. It teaches them how to be a decision maker and it makes them feel like they have a sense of control so that they're a little more even keeled.
I think I'm somewhere between what my definition has been presented to me, or at least I'm interpreting as gentle parenting, and what my dad did. So I do believe that kids should be heard, but I also think they need to know at the end of the day, we are making the final decision, but you have been heard.
Yes, and gentle parenting, that's what gentle parenting is. And that's why I sent you this, because I feel like we haven't really, Cassie and I haven't been able to ingrain what gentle parenting really is. And this is a TikToker, Casey Davis. She's at Domestic Blisters. She's also a counselor. And she breaks down, I think, beautifully what gentle parenting is and why it's beneficial not only for the child, but also for the parent.
I'm so sick of people on gentle parenting by being like, making children soft. Makes children soft. Do you know what the softest thing in the world is? The softest, most pillowy, fragile being in existence is a fully grown adult that cannot regulate their behavior in the face of something a literal child has done. Gentle parenting is literally just regulated parenting. It is, I want to learn how to regulate my own emotions, how to manage my own nervous system activation before deciding what to do in response to my child, so that I don't just all over them. Because newsflash, Becky, parents who are regulated don't hit and scream at their children.
Yeah, I don't think any hitting or screaming should ever be done to your children. This is Tank Sinatra, and this is his definition of gentle parenting.
Hey, I know you're frustrated, okay? I know you're having these big feelings that you don't know what to do with. But if you don't shut the f*** up and put your shoes on, then I'm going to start having big feelings and I might start screaming, which is going to make you have even bigger feelings. Isn't that scary? Yeah, so let's slip those Crocs on.
So, the difference is that's what goes through my head,
right?
But it's not what comes out my mouth.
Right. Here is Trip. Trip, good morning. Gentle parenting is on the table.
Good morning. So as a mother of five, and I have four teenagers in the house right now, I do believe in gentle parenting, but also with a side of fool around and find out.
Yes, ma'am.
There it is.
I'm very familiar with that.
There it is right there. I feel you on that. How old are the kids?
So my oldest is 27, and then I have a 16, 15, 13 and 12.
Damn, you got your hands full. Mm-hmm. So explain to us, in your case, what is the definition of gentle parenting with those teens?
We talk a lot. It's a lot of open communication. There's an agreement that everybody has to be honest. Consequences are given out for our dishonesty. I'm huge on that. We can work everything else out, but dishonesty is not accepted. We talk a lot. I allow feelings, but they also have to respect that I have feelings as well. So it's just really an open conversation. I'm also a single parent.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to be very open with one another to make sure everybody understands and we're all on the same page. Doesn't always work, but it's been... It works some days.
Yeah, I totally subscribe to your definition of gentle parenting. I think that's what I do with my kids also. I think with my dad, it was, and my parents, there was, you don't get a say in the matter, and there was literally no respect. There was nothing. It was my way. Don't ask questions. This is the way it's going to be. And with my kids, it's very, very different. I mean, we talk through things. My kid this weekend did something that was really stupid, but there's no yelling or anything that's going on. It's like, here's why that's not going to happen, why this can't happen again. And we talk about it, but he's heard and I'm heard. There's no yelling.
Yeah, see, and that's what you have been doing, gentle parenting. Like, you've been cracking on it, but you've been a gentle parent.
It doesn't mean no boundaries and no consequences, but I just tell my daughter the consequences. I say, if you do that again, you are choosing to lose this. Mm-hmm. She does it again, she loses it. So there are boundaries, there are punishments. It's just you're communicating with your kid.
Now, the kids' table, I'm telling you where you're sitting. And we're not going to talk about it. Okay. It's the Burt Show.
The Burt Show.
She knows for sure that her boss's son has drugs at their home.
Ooh.
And she's wondering, do I tell my boss about this? Do I keep it to myself? If you got something going on in your life and you want to get some advice from people that are way smarter than us, our Burt Show fam, hit us up at theburtshow.com. Kristen has the email.
Do I tell my boss that her son has drugs in his room? I'm a teacher and my principal has two boys. The younger son is friends with my son and they occasionally have sleepovers slash play dates. Recently, my son came home and said that he, and I'm hoping she's using a fake name, Leo, snuck into the older son's room so that Leo could show him where his brother keeps his pot stash. My son told me it looked like a sandwich full of pot and was hidden in a sock drawer.
A sandwich full of pot?
Maybe she meant to put sandwich bag.
Okay.
That makes a little more sense.
A pot sandwich.
Yeah.
Huh.
Never thought of it.
I'm copywriting it.
My question is, should I tell my principal about this or just let it go? Although she and I are friendly, our relationship is more on the professional side. I'm also aware that she has caught this son with drugs in the past, so this probably wouldn't come as a huge surprise. It would be very awkward to tell her, and what if for some reason my son isn't telling the truth? Ugh, please advise.
1-855-BIRCHO. Abby, what are you doing?
I know that you have a professional relationship with this person, but I also think if I was a parent, I would want to know. And maybe that's because I'm a little bit of a control freak. And if I had kids running around, I would want to know what they were up to at all times, like my mom did. But I think it would be really, I think it's maybe an opportunity to take your professional relationship to, I think intimate's the wrong word, but I think you could almost establish like a little bit of a layer of trust if you came to this principal and gave them information about their child that I think most parents would want to know.
I think I'm too progressive in this area here to give a really good piece of advice. Because to me, it's like no different than you finding that he has a beer in his room. So, and I certainly wouldn't go to my boss and go, hey, I just want to let you know that your kid has a beer in his room. That's just the way I feel about weed.
Oh, no, I would. At that young of an age, to be consuming that while your brain is still developing and stuff like that, I think it's important they know.
They're in high school?
She said, she didn't say, it doesn't say. Mm-hmm. We don't have the ages.
Yeah, I got to be honest with you. I'd probably stay out of it.
I think I'm staying out of this one. I mean, if I felt like I had more than just a professional relationship, I'd consider it. But knowing that that's the case, and for me, with her saying that she probably knows this already because she's caught him in the past, I don't think that I would get in the middle of that at all. I'm minding my business.
No, I'm telling her.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You're going in, huh?
Yeah, I would do it. I would try to do it in a professional manner. This is information of in our state an illegal substance that's in your son's room. And again, not knowing specifically the age, and you know, I just think it's important information that she knows. So I would go, listen, my son told me something. I don't know if it's true or not, but I think it's important you know. And this is what he told me. And so just please do with that information, whatever you want.
Yeah, I think that's the difference for me is that alcohol at some point is going to be legal for your kid, maybe in a couple of years. Like, let's say he's 16. If you live in a state where weed is illegal, period, that could lead to consequences that are much, much more serious than just like an MIP. And especially like he could be dealing, like to me, like as a parent, my mind would go to like so many different conclusions that I think it's just a little bit more serious than finding a beer or a bottle of vodka. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think you guys are probably right.
And I'm just putting like, as a parent, I would want to know, like I would hope like if Cassie had this information. Okay, granted, I know we're really good friends, but just like we do work together. If she had this information, I would hope she would tell me.
Yeah, I know I'm treading. We do a mainstream radio show, so I'm trying to give a mainstream answer. But if I have to be completely authentic, mm-hmm. like I've had the talks with my kids before about drugs, about weed, about alcohol. So if somebody came to me and said, hey, I just want to let you know that, your kid has some weed in his room, that I work, I it just wouldn't, It wouldn't entirely shock me, and it certainly wouldn't send me into some kind of panic.
Well, and that's fine.
Yeah.
But it's saying, then that means there's no harm in giving that information.
Yeah.
And here, too, it's not like they found a joint. They found a sandwich bag full of weed. So he might, if he has a sandwich bag full of weed, might not all be for him. He may be dealing at school. So that's just important information to have.
Well, first of all, I'd have to sample it to make sure it's safe. Then we have to have a talk.
You, like I said, you do with this information whatever you want. If you want to take it away and use it for yourself, hey, more power to you. You're the one that has the developed brain.
I think your guy's advice is better than mine in this case. I will say that.
People on the phones are saying mind your own business.
Hey, Jasmine, good morning. You're on the Burt Show. Hi.
Yes, I would tread very lightly with that subject because that is my principal and she's kind of my boss. And if I bring that to her attention, she may be embarrassed about it because you guys said that he has had issues with the substances before.
Mm-hmm.
So it might be embarrassing to her. I would let it be. As long as my kid is doing what they're supposed to be doing, that is up to her.
Yeah, forget about the village, man.
Well, you do have to take into consideration, is this the kind of person that's going to take this information and be grateful, or are they going to retaliate? Like, if you told me this about my kid, I would be like, thank you so much. I will take care of this. I'm not going to retaliate, and I'm not going to, like, come after you for just telling me something that my kid may or may not be doing.
Yeah.
That always concerns me because I feel like you can't really tell if the person is going to take it. Like, I appreciate that, or if they're going to take it and almost be a little bit like you jealous, like you are trying to sabotage my family. No, thank you. Mm-hmm. And now you're the problem.
Hey, Wendy, good morning. You're part of the Burt Show.
Good morning.
Hi.
So I will preface this. My mother is a teacher. My father is a police officer. So I was raised in the drugs are bad. Drugs are bad. But with all the advancements in science and knowledge that we have about marijuana, how do we know that the mother isn't allowing their child to use marijuana to treat anxiety or depression? Or pain, for that matter.
Yeah.
Well, she said in the email, I'm also aware that she has caught this son with drugs in the past. So
that's very, very plausible. But as children, I'm a mother of four, so I get it. Children develop as they get older, obviously. Who's to say this child isn't self-medicating with marijuana?
Well, if that's the case, I need to know that about my child.
Yeah, I would need to know. And if I was the mom and I knew, I'm taking the controlled substance and dishing it out. They're not keeping it in a sandwich bag in a sock drawer.
Yeah.
When your kids are old enough, will you be going through their rooms and stuff when they're not around?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I'll go through it while they're there.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yep, and they'll know. Like, I'll talk to them, but if you're in my house, I have unless it's a private journal, that's off limits, but anything else in the house, I get to go through.
The Burt Show.
If you got an item appraised and you were shocked at the value, we want you to call up 1-855-BURT-SHOW, 855-237-23... What's the number?
1-855-237-8746.
Thank you. It's Friday.
Yeah.
Friday.
You've been here 13 years.
Every now and then, I get like a roadblock in my head, and it just won't.
You got the yips?
Yes, mm-hmm. Maybe I do.
You got the radio yips.
I got the radio yips. Sorry for everybody listening, but you ain't paying for it, so you're going to get what you get. All right, so we have appraisers coming on the show later today from Ehlers and Ogletree Auction Gallery. Our producer Amber has some Pokemon cards. Bert has some autographed memorabilia from Muhammad Ali and Tony Gwynn. So we're going to have some of our items appraised, which made us want to ask you guys, hey, if you've ever had something appraised and you were blown away that you couldn't believe you had something like this and it cost this much, we want you to share. We shared the phone number. I'm not sharing it again. So this video had gone viral. And of course, I was obsessed with it. I come from a military family. So I love so much what this Vietnam War veteran found out about this Rolex that he had. So I want you to picture, this is from the Antiques Roadshow. They're outside. He's standing there with this Vietnam veteran. He looks like Gandalf, okay? The long white beard and the long white hair. He's wearing an army green button up. And he's got a camouflage bandana around his head, like a headband. Okay. And here he is presenting this Rolex. that he bought for $345, and this is what they tell him.
The date mark on the bracelet shows that it was made in the first quarter of 1971. Your watch was made approximately 1971, and you ordered it a couple years later. Collectors love this watch because Paul Newman wore it in a movie called Winning. It wasn't this particular model. It did not have the screw-down buttons. The one that Paul Newman wore, currently at auction, those watches are going for approximately $150,000 to $200,000. Your watch is more special.
It says
Oyster on it.
Yes.
They did that for an extremely short period of time. We refer to that as a Mark II dial. And this particular model, being marked Oyster, is extremely, extremely rare. A watch like this at auction is worth about $400,000.
He pretends to pass out.
You okay? Don't fall. I'm not done yet. I said a watch like yours because of the condition of it. Basically, it's a new old stock watch. No wear on it. The original foil sticker on the back of it. And the fact that we have all this complete documentation here also. Maybe one of the very few in the whole world that still was never worn. Your watch at auction today. $500,000 to $700,000.
For a watch?
No, I'm very serious. Oh, it's an absolute fabulous find. It's one of the rarest Paul Newman models.
Wow.
So he bought it again back at, like, in, I think, 1973 for $350, and that watch can now go up to $700,000.
That is incredible.
I know. I love it so much.
That's amazing.
Do you guys remember when I told you about the Winnie the Pooh sketch that I had since my childhood? Like, it was this beautiful little sketch outline in pencil of Winnie the Pooh, and I cherished that thing, and I finally contacted a friend at an art gallery for an appraisal, and she told me it was worth the dollar because the frame broke, and we looked at the back, and there was like a 99 pence sticker on the back.
You thought it was like a real still, didn't you?
I did. Because it was framed in my childhood bedroom, like in one of those cute glass floating frames. Like, I feel robbed.
Barbara, what were you shocked to find out the value of?
I was shocked to find out the value of a tennis bracelet that my husband had bought. Well, actually, he didn't buy it. He let a friend of his borrow, I believe it was $200, because the man was in desperate need of some cash. And the man said, here, I'll give you this, and we'll call it even, basically. And so he gave it to me, and he went and had it appraised and cleaned up, and it was $10,000.
What?
Whoa.
$200? So did you?
I'm assuming the other guy didn't know that.
Well, we were going to tell him about it, but he said that it was his ex-wife, and that she took all the jewelry she wanted and left that. So.
And you never told him.
So did you keep it, or did you end up doing a resale?
No, I kept it. I've got it.
Nice. All right, thanks so much for sharing. Hey, Tyler, thanks for joining the Burr Show. Funnily enough, Amber's going to have her Pokemon cards appraised later on in the show, but you had yours appraised. What did you end up finding out about your Pokemon cards?
So I bought mine in 2019 for $150 because I based at Charizard. And sold it in 2022 for $2,500.
Nice.
That's amazing. Amazing.
During COVID, everybody got into collecting. That's why they kind of skyrocketed.
Yeah.
And then when Logan Paul opened his on YouTube, people got like really into it.
Yeah.
That's why the value of them kind of like just jumped.
Well, congratulations on your find, man.
Yeah.
Also, Charizard's the GOAT. That's the best Pokemon.
Who?
It's Charmander, the little dragon. I'm just saying, if you play Pokemon, you know that one's
the
best.
We know Pikachu. I don't know.
The Burt Show.
What better way to kick off a Friday than with some stupid?
Sometimes it's fun to be stupid. Everybody gets stupid, stupid.
Everybody gets stupid, stupid. Yo, you don't even know what stupid is. It's about to get all stupid up in here.
All right, so Mo, Cassie, Tommy, we're playing a game this morning. Real mascot or fake mascot?
Oh, I got this.
I love
college
this.
Football season is underway. The other day, Bert mentioned Sammy the Banana Slug. And I was like, you have got to be kidding me. And sure enough, University of California, Santa Cruz, they have a mascot called Sammy the Banana Slug. So I went through and I got some names of some real mascots. And I also threw some fake ones that I made up in here. And you guys have to determine, is this a real mascot or is this a fake mascot?
Okay.
Super simple. All right. Out the gate. The Chokers.
Oh.
That's a horrible name to have. It was
The Chokers. Real mascot or fake mascot? Mo, we'll start with you.
I'm going to go real just because I believe it's not. So I think it's a trick question. I'm going to go real.
Cassie?
Yeah, I think it's real as well.
Tommy?
I'm going to go the other way. I think it's fake.
It is a real mascot.
The Choker?
Is it like a necklace choker or like a hand necklace choker?
Grays Harbor College in Aberdeen, Washington is represented by the mascot, Charlie the Choker. Charlie's rope that he holds is a choker bell formerly used in the area to transport logs.
Wow, okay.
Oh, neat.
What's the school again?
Grays Harbor College in Aberdeen, Washington. So, wow. Go Chokers!
Yeah, I wouldn't want to be known as the Chokers. Yeah. Who wants that yell at their game?
Maybe I'm superficial. I once didn't apply to a college because of their mascot.
Really? Which one was it?
Oh, God, I think it's like Richardson or something. It was a spider. I was like, really? Absolutely not. I hate spiders. Yeah, right? I was like, I cannot go to a school. So I went to one and said, where are mascots? A skeleton.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Mm-hmm. All right, your next one. The Killer Kiwis.
The Killer Kiwis.
Is it the fruit? Is it the animal? I'm not going to disclose. The Killer Kiwis.
I don't know why, but something tells me that's fake.
I think it's real, but I think it's a New Zealand school.
Okay.
That's exactly what I was thinking. I think it's real.
I completely made that one up.
Oh! I'm rolling right now.
That was a cool name. I'd wear that merch.
All right. Ready? Keggy the Keg.
Keggy the Keg.
Keggy the Keg.
That's fake.
Yeah, that's not real.
No college is doing that.
No, I want that to be real. Please let it be real.
It's real.
What?
All right, so Dartmouth may be an Ivy League school, but that doesn't stop its students from having some fun. Though the school doesn't have an official mascot, its unofficial representative, Keggy the Keg, often shows up to sporting events and is embraced by the student body. That's and it is hilarious. Literally a giant keg.
Keggy the Keg.
I love it.
I love that. I'm here for that one.
All right, Mo's on a roll.
Yep.
The Fighting Okra.
There's no way. An okra? No.
The Fighting Okra.
No, I feel like you made that one up.
If you never had pickled okra in your Bloody Mary, you're missing out, by the way.
That's real.
It is real.
It's real?
It is
Who
real.
Who is an okra?
Fighting Okra, and the pictures are so amazing. It's the unofficial mascot of Delta State University. It's a giant okra that wears boxing gloves and has aggressive tendencies.
Oh, my God. Can I literally tell you when you said that? I almost said, like, all I'm imagining is, like, a long okra with boxing gloves on.
It's 100% what it is. And apparently, it has very aggressive tendencies.
Okay.
Have you looked up the picture to see if they actually have, like, somebody that dresses up in that?
Yeah. No, this list came with pictures of the mascots. Oh, so I've seen all of them.
Wow.
All right. Next one. Marty the Mollusk.
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 That's real. That sounds like some Portland, Washington state.
That's too hard to say.
Yeah, I'm going as real.
Tommy, what did you say
fake.
Again? It is fake. I made that one
you
up.
You made that one up?
Yeah.
You get Mollusk, Marty the Mollusk, bro.
Because Jimmy is really into underwater sea creatures, and we watch these YouTube videos of people, like, collecting them and putting them in pools and then re-releasing them. So I got, like, underwater sea creatures on the brain.
Got you.
All right, next. Peter the Anteater.
No, come on.
Peter the Anteater.
No, that's not real.
Real.
It is real.
God!
What?
The University of California Irvine's mascot is known as Peter the Anteater. He's a crowd pleaser with his likable demeanor and the chant, give him tongue.
Stop it. Are you serious?
Yes.
I'd like to have a word with some of their branding VPs.
All right. So we got two more. All right. Real mascot or fake mascot? Artie the Artichoke.
Artie the Artichoke is a fire name. That's real.
I'm going to go real.
Fake.
It is real.
Yes, that's real.
It is real. Artie, the Fighting Artichoke. Students standing up for what they believe in is one of the hallmarks of a college education, and that's what Scottsdale Community College students did in the 1970s. Angry that university officials were recruiting, bribing athletes with scholarship funds set aside for Native American students. Students protested by choosing a ridiculous mascot. Artie, the fighting artichoke, has kept on until this day.
I kind of love that.
I'm not mad at that
one.
Yeah, that's fine.
All right, and then the last one. Real mascot or fake mascot? Scrody.
That is real, and it's a mascot of a medical college.
Stop.
Scrody.
A prostate exam.
That's not real.
Yeah, that came from your evil mind.
It's real.
Scrody.
Who's Scrody?
Scrody's real, and I have a picture I will send you.
I don't want it.
So, though the university administration hasn't accepted Scrody, he's a full-fledged mascot if you ask any of the student body. Scrody is the unofficial mascot of the Rhode Island School of Design.
What does Scrody look like?
Basically a penis in a scrotum costume.
Okay.
Oh, yep. Okay.
Thanks for asking.
Scrody supports the basketball team, the Balls, okay. And the hockey team, the Nads.
Wow.
When he's around, students either cheer, "When the heat is on, the Balls stick together."
Oh.
Or, "Go Nads."
I do not want to see what happens when Scrody gets excited.
Well, the costume already comes like that. So,
Yeah, it does. Scrody always exciting.
And then the cheerleaders, due to their support of the Nads, are known as the Jockstraps.
Stop.
Well, I think I'd rather be a choker.
The Burt Show.